We often hear from our listeners, I want an agent for my cookbook. How do I find one? We tackled this a bit in episode 2, but there's always more to say. So let's talk about it. Welcome to Everything Cookbooks, the podcast for curious writers, readers, and cooks. This is Kristen Donnelly, and joining me in this episode is Kate Leahy. Hey, Kate.
Hey, Kristen.
So we both work with agents and we can share our own insights about finding an agent. But to tackle this topic even more deeply, we thought we'd bring on Sally Eckes.
I just think it's great anytime we get to pick an agent's brain because I always learn something new. You always have these questions stored up and you're thinking, well, do you need to write a query letter? Do you need to have a social media following? Because sometimes I get asked these questions and sometimes I don't know the answer. We're going to put Sally in the hot seat today. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. And I think she'll probably talk to us a lot about the value she can provide for an author. And I'm hoping she'll talk a bit about trends, just to help people, if they have an idea, help them figure out, you know, is this something that the publishing market wants?
I really want to know how she likes to be approached, because I think there are a lot of people looking for agents. But is it one of those things where it's, you know, sometimes agents want to find authors on their own? And so then if you are an author and you want to get recognized, how does that work? What do you have to do to make yourself stand out? Maybe you already have a publisher who's interested in talking to you about a book. Then what do you do?
Yeah, same. Like, how do you make yourself irresistible?
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
So I'll just introduce Sally a little more formally. Sally Eckes is the lead agent and co-owner at the Eckes Group, a full-service culinary agency specializing in literary and talent representation. So that's actually interesting because she's not just a literary agent, but they do offer some other services. She has brokered over 300 book deals with top publishers. She speaks all over the country about publishing trends and agenting and facilitates workshops about the publishing process. To honor the Eckes Group's 40th anniversary this spring, she launched a self-paced online course called How to Write a Cookbook. Hey, Sally, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. This is my dream come true.
Well, I'm so glad we could make your dreams come true today. So welcome.
Yeah, thank you. You are such an avid listener.
It's been such a pleasure. It is a wonderful resource to anybody who wants to learn anything about writing and publishing cookbooks. So I cannot recommend this podcast enough. An unsolicited endorsement.
Thank you. You're the second agent we've had on. The first was Rika Alanik, and she said something. It was our second episode, and she talked about what she looks for in an author is a great idea, a compelling voice, and a solid platform. And we were wondering for you if that rings true.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that having all three of those is the winning combination. And like she was saying, you know, some are stronger than others. I will sort of asterisk that really there's also that like non-quantifiable something special that you just know when you see, hear, read, or cook it. That's the thing that can supersede everything else too for me.
Can you give an example?
Sometimes I just get totally sucked in. My inbox and my, you know, DMs and my notifications are all like competing for my attention. And if I have just spent like 37 minutes reading something or watching something or cooking something or listening to something without deviating my attention, I know I want to sign that something.
Wow, that's cool.
That's a really good point because you're right. We're competing for everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And agents have such little attention to provide because you're getting inundated from all, you know, all sides with your notifications, with your inbox. And then at the same time, you have to get your ideas out to those editors. So if something does grab you, that's a pretty good indication that other people are going to be grabbed by this same idea or voice, or I guess you wouldn't be grabbed by a platform, right?
So. Well, maybe, right?
Like sometimes I'll come across something on, you know, Instagram or elsewhere, and I'll be like, oh, cool, the numbers are there. I keep digging, I keep looking. And all of a sudden, I'm just like in this rabbit hole of videos or watching somebody eat and talk about what they're eating. I'm like, how did I even get here? Okay, I'm emailing them now.
Wow.
Yeah, what, when you say the numbers are there, what does that mean?
Let me just also say that as an agency, we have historically done the uphill climb with quote unquote small platforms, which is like hundreds of thousands of followers and under, right? Like that is considered small. It's considered micro. It's considered highly engaged, you know, like however you want to spin it. And big numbers are 500,000 and up, right? Like that's just going to get your attention to stay a tiny bit longer. And by your, I mean like the antiquated traditional publishing industry, but numbers are one part of the equation. They're like really important. They're not the end all be all.
Is there like a minimum though that you're often looking for?
Honestly, it's either really high, which is like over hundreds of thousands, or it's small and I pay attention for other reasons. And that might be like voice or content, obviously, creativity, or just like uniqueness of idea and like personality, right? I mean, if somebody's personality is there, it's probably going to show up in the number of followers they have. But if their personality is elsewhere in their cooking or in their writing, then maybe they just got on Instagram or they just got on another social platform and you got to give them some time. And if I talk, so like if I'm interested and the platform, and let's define platform solely by numbers for a minute, just for traditional publishers' sake, though I do not think that should be the only definition. If that's not there, defined by numbers, then I still would get someone on a Zoom or a call. And if they are doing the things that will get them there and they recognize that that's an important part of growing their business, I'm totally down to still partner with them as an agent at that stage because I want to be a part of their growth. And in fact, I want to be a part of that strategy and really intentionality in their career.
That's so interesting. So it's like, I guess you can see it. Like you said, when you know, you can see that that person is going to grow.
It's like they know they need to play in that sandbox, but it's not going to happen overnight.
So in a case, is it sort of like as an agent, you see yourself as partnering with somebody for their career to sort of help grow their career so you can strategize with them on what the next career step is? Is that kind of part of it?
That's how I like to work and how our agency has historically signed authors. I mean, we like to look for somebody who has that first book, but also has future goals of publishing. That being said, I was listening to a previous episode of the podcast and you were wondering, I think you asked the question about like, should a restaurant that only wants to just do one book work with an agent? And my answer to that is also yes, because there are so many nuances to collaborations and payouts and partnerships that agents have an expertise in as an author's representative, that whether it's like one book or five books, I still think an agent brings tremendous value to the table. Specifically for my author list and for our agency, we do look for long-term author careers.
And that brings me to a question we wanted to, Kristen and I wanted to talk to you about, is how do you think agenting has changed since you started working in the field? I mean, is it a lot different even, say, from 3 years ago before the pandemic? What is it like to be an agent today?
Oh, my gosh. I'm really excited. You know, like, Kristen, you have this incredible course and information available for how to find cookbook agents. Like, I was just so impressed that there are so many more cookbook specific literary agents out there. And so for that, that's really exciting. You know, like our agency doesn't want to and can't represent everybody. I love saying, well, this is really great. Doesn't speak to me. Here's an introduction. Or I really love this. I don't have the time to give it my all the way I like to for whatever reason. So in terms of agenting in the culinary specific space, it's really exciting that there's more options and there's more opportunity. In terms of agenting and, you know, the broader publishing framework, it's one of many challenged roles in the publishing industry. And as a whole, that industry is, you know, experiencing different like demands and challenges and changes, pandemic related, but also not, you know, just in general, as every industry has been changed over the past few years. And, you know, I'm sort of unique and specific in that I was offered an opportunity to work at Lisa's agency, my mom, when I started in this business. And so my access to hyper mentoring as an agent was basically right from the start. So like, I didn't have to climb some corporate agent ladder. I was able to, you know, I'm learning still, like every deal I do is still a learning experience, but I went all in right from the start and grew from there. So it's a fairly unique opportunity.
Did you always know that you wanted to be an agent?
No.
I was going to say, or maybe the last thing you wanted to be was an agent?
Well, so I thought I wanted to be a counselor and go into social work. And my background is in psychology and mental health. And I've been trained in active listening, negotiation, and crisis counseling.
Wow.
Those three things, I'm thinking, really come in handy as an agent.
I realized quickly that my training applied very directly to working with authors and in the cookbook setting, but nobody's life was actually on the line. I used to work on an inpatient psychiatric unit. So
wow.
I can navigate cover conversations no matter how heated they get, which they
the cover, always the dreaded cover conversation, but you're thinking no one's life is on the line. So we can, there's nothing that's going to really ruffle your feathers too badly then.
This was a very serendipitous accident. I moved home and started helping Lisa out at the agency and quite quickly realized I loved it. I had been informally training for it my whole life. I grew up in, you know, what it quote unquote are the good old days of cookbook publishing when publishers were sending authors on multi-city book tours. And so I have this historical knowledge of what publishing used to be. So when I go into a book deal or I go into a negotiation, I can bring that history and the nostalgia to the table, but also sort of demand current rates and standards.
Well, what can an agent demand now? When does that come into play with, you know, what an author can ask for in terms of, you know, support from the publisher?
So I think that, you know, with every increasing demand that is put on an author, you have the opportunity to say yes, and what are you going to do to support me? Right. So if an author is required to reach out to where they're going to go to do events or reach out to their media contacts, and what are you in-house publicists going to do to help me give them the digital assets that they need or help me coordinate the logistics of this or, God forbid, like underwrite part of it, right? And so I can make a case very specifically for why you should invest the limited marketing budget you have in a piece of collateral for this event, or why you should invest in the flights to this location or this secondary market, because then we can build out, you know, a local television segment or a radio opportunity, right? So I bring this specificity as an agent to the table. And also I'm like a relentless detailed follow-upper. So, you know, it's like my goal is to also not let anything fall through the cracks on behalf of our authors.
I think that's really interesting and something maybe people don't think about with agents. They think of them during the book sales process, but not as much post-sale.
So this was also where I was re-listening to some episodes and thinking about, like,
tell us what we got wrong. We can take it.
Well, when Andrea was talking about the negotiations and the escalators, like, I would say 10% of what I do is the actual negotiation of your book deal. It is everything else around managing collaboration agreement or thinking about, you know, when you're writing the manuscript, what fall best covered books are out there and how do we make sure that that person is seeing your book when it's time or feeding them early material. Like, we're just a ultra connector, and that's really what an agent's job is to like move your career forward. And that might be, if you're working with someone who is, you know, a literary agent alone, okay, great. Then their job is to like move your author career forward. Our agency looks at it in a slightly more comprehensive way. There's still elements of sort of being represented by us in those different capacities. But at the end of the day, like, we want you to be the best version of yourself in every form of your content. So I'm thinking about that while you're writing the manuscript, while, you know, at the proposal stage, of course, then when it comes to the manuscript, and then after too. So, you know, we have books that are on backlists and we're still sending them to high profile influencers or connectors to make sure that book stays relevant.
Cool.
Oh, that's a really good point. We oftentimes on this podcast talk about playing the long game, and you've taken all these years to create a book and then for it just to abandon that and go on to the next project. Sometimes those books really can have long lives if you keep supporting them.
Yeah. I mean, you are going to bring that book to life long-term, hopefully better than anyone as an author. And your agent's job is to be in your corner and like help educate you on other ways to do that along the way. I will also say too that I'm basically selling proposals before the proposal's ready, right? Like, so as an agent, I'm in touch with all of the people I'm going to pitch your project to well before your proposal's ready, because I've sold them other books. I've worked with them in the past. I'm talking about, you know, the fall launch of X title. So my job is to keep you front and center. And that takes time and effort. And like to do that really well, I'm feeding, you know, press coverage that you have so that when that proposal is ready, it's like the last step is like sending them for proposal, setting up calls and negotiating.
So it's like that relationship management is such a valuable part of what agents do.
I love the relationships and the connections.
Mm-hmm. What's something you wish more aspiring authors knew before they reached out?
I have started telling them about the podcast. I mean, I wish that more aspiring authors did their homework, because it's not that hard to consume the limited yet really high value content on how to do this well. Like, not everyone wants to understand what Lisa often says is like how the clock's made in addition to what time it is, right? But for some authors, and if that resonates with you, those that are listening, like, consume the podcast. There's like such great information on how to be a great author and educate yourself along the way, right? I mean, how to make a good proposal is a skill. And if you don't have, you know, necessarily like perfect recipe testing experience, collaborate with someone. Like, there's no short of people to collaborate and join forces with to do this really well. And I just wish that people took their time to do it right, not rushed.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really good point too, on just like what you're saying about just learning a little bit more about the process. So then when people are trying to get your attention, they're not wasting your time. How do people get in touch? Nowadays, is it normal for, say, someone looking for representation to write a query letter and then send it to your office? Or do they sometimes just write the whole proposal and then your inbox is flooded with a 40-page manuscript that's maybe single-spaced on some sort of strange font that's hard to read? Like, what happens?
We get it all. and it's not that hard to really stand out and know what we're looking for. Like, we have proposal guidelines available on our website at ekisgroup.com. It very clearly walks you through what you need to put into a book proposal. That is a huge first step, right? And it's not that hard to have access to us through social media, or I moderate a Facebook group that anyone listening is welcome to join called How to Be a Cookbook Author, right? And so, like, I see people posting in there. I see who's engaging. I see who's offering both their expertise, their resources, their questions. And, you know, that's a way to stand out. It's not by any means a necessity, but if you're really looking to learn about how to be a good author, those are ways that you can connect with our agency sort of indirectly. In terms of directly querying us, I often hear from people via social, though I like to be queried via my email. Otherwise, you will get lost. So it's fine, and in fact, great to say, like, hey, I'm going to be sending you a proposal, because I'll see somebody in my DMs, or I'll say, oh, I can see they've been following us or engaging with our agency. But to formally query us, I like that via email. And a query letter is great, but then having your proposal ready to go, because I don't want to then wait for the proposal to be done. And I most recently had the experience where somebody who's taken our workshops and engaged with us via social and definitely been like a colleague online sent me a message saying, I'm ready to formally query you, heads up. And I thought, oh, well, that's a nice way to flag it, right? And, you know, again, like, many agents are not as available online, but our agency, it's not hard to find us on social and like touch us in that way, in a meaningful, connected way. And so, again, also, if you are an expert in your field and your platform is ready to be represented by an agent, it is highly unlikely that we haven't crossed paths in some form. I mean, we are a very collaborative, very supportive agency for the industry as a whole. So if we have never heard of you and you're a complete expert, I've missed the boat, you've missed the boat, I don't know, right? Like, we've probably crossed paths in some way. So to then query us with a, you know, highly personalized, well done query via email is the way to go.
So assuming the proposal's in good shape, what are the key things that should be in that email?
You know, there's the like checklist of it's personalized, you've made it clear who you are, what your idea is, what your platform is, it's succinct, it's not long. And then there's that like sparkle, right? I have only ever once like gotten an unsolicited query letter that had that sparkle, and we sign them.
Only once.
You just kind of know it when you feel it or you read it. But that's also not to intimidate people. It's all to say that, like, hit the marks, right? Do your homework. Talk about why you want to work with our agency. And probably one of our clients or some our colleagues who we don't represent is gonna give me a heads up and say, hey, you know, this person is querying you. I've been watching them in this space. This is how they're doing what they do really well. Those are the people that our agency, at least, is really interested in working with, is those like industry supporters.
I think this kind of reminds me of when people want to freelance and write for magazines, and they query magazines and they pitch them this story that they want to write about, I don't know, their grandmother's noodles. But they just send out the blanket statement to everybody, and it's not personalized. It's not tailored to that publication. That publication might not write about noodles because it's paleo and they only do certain types of noodles that have no flour in it. I mean, I don't know. There's all these things. But so that step, that just shows that the writer on the other side hasn't done the homework. They're so eager to get their work out there, but it doesn't seem to take that long. You have a lot of information on your website, like you said.
And you know what? It's hard work to do all that homework and personalize it to each person you want to work with. And you know what else? Writing a book is a really hard.
So true.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, you've talked about the homework that you sometimes give potential clients. Can you talk about that?
I like to see that somebody is going to put in the hard work. So we put people through a really vigorous proposal process, even when it comes into us. Like, not often is it near perfect. So it'll go through a couple rounds of revision. And sometimes the revisions are more labor intensive than others. And if people query me and I'm interested and I have a sense maybe they'd be a right fit for us and maybe they don't really know what they're getting themselves into and how much work the actual book writing and book promotion and sales process is, I'll give them some homework to do to see, like, when do they follow through? It doesn't have to be right away, but do they follow through is kind of like the lowest bar. And then we work up from there. So I might ask somebody to send me some comp titles that I can run book scan numbers on. So it's like a really practical education moment for them too. So I give them homework. They fulfill it. Okay, cool. And then I educate them back, like, hey, you think this book has sold wildly well? Newsflash, publishing is not, you know, a retirement plan.
So true.
That also kind of builds the type of relationship we might have. And then we go from there.
That's a good point. It also sets them up for expectations that they're not going to sell 500,000 books out of the gate. Because I think I worked with a chef once or a restaurant owner once. And I said, yeah, it'll be really great if this book, you know, sells 20,000 copies. And they looked at me and they're thinking about like how many salads they sell per week in the restaurant. And they're thinking, we sell like thousands of, you know, how would it be that hard to sell cookbooks? And I'm kind of like, it's a different thing, totally different thing.
Is a big, beautiful business card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are so many wonderful ways to leverage it as such. And if somebody's expectations around what their book is does not fall within that perspective, I'm not the right agent for them. They are a tool to round out other elements of their of an author's brand and vision and career.
Yeah, I found that even in my own career, where it's like the book then gave me the authority to then be the like go-to recipe developer for anything related to potlucks. I mean, 6 years later, I'm still getting calls like, hey, could you develop recipes for this potluck story we're doing? So that's one of those benefits of a book that I did not think about beforehand. But another thing, I was thinking about like wanting to be a lazy author, kind of. Like, I remember.
That sounds like a good title for a book, actually. How to be a lazy author.
Yeah. It's like I lucked out with finding an agent because like he was on the way up and I was on the way up and I was a magazine editor. So it was appealing, I guess, to sign me. But to actually do the book, I thought it would be like, hey, what about this? And he'd be like, great. And then, you know, go out and sell it. And it was like, great, write a proposal. I'm like, okay, how do I do that? And he's like, here's this document. You know, it's a lot of work. So
it's so much work. And some agents handhold more than others. And, you know, we can only take on so many clients that need a certain level of handholding at one time. You know, it's like, it's all about finding that balance. And it's so important to find the right agent, not just any agent.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, because I'm sure there's been proposals that have crossed your desk that this is a good proposal, but there's something about it that just doesn't spark that interest in you to go that extra mile, that take it to that next level. But you know that it's going to find a home with another agent who's going to give that idea justice. And I'm sure there's other things where you've found it, where you've like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I can't believe other agents have passed on it because you see the potential, right? Is that part of it?
Yeah. I mean, I will often see proposals that are really strong and it's just not something I'm interested in. And that's fine. And in fact, like I'm doing that author a favor by passing because they will just stay in my inbox. If I have a proposal, no matter how busy I am, if I have a query in my inbox that is sitting for more than like 3 or 4 weeks, barring some external factor, which granted we've all been through in the past couple of years, I just know I'm not the right agent, and I'll recommend other agents or give them some, you know, feedback and say, here's what I think you, I often do that. I will say, here's my feedback on the proposal. And when you query other agents, you know, I would suggest making some of these adjustments if this resonates.
Wow.
With you, you know?
That's actually incredible that you take
really
the time
generous.
Because I would think that you get so many queries that it takes too much out of your day to individually answer to people. So that you do that is actually really huge.
Thank you. It's also sometimes why it takes us a little while to respond. I mean, you know, that's like one of the many reasons and ways I'm proud to work with my mom and, you know, for Lisa, because that was part of the ethos as our agenting division of the agency since the beginning, is just being a resource and providing that feedback. I remember when I first started, we would get like, this was back when proposals were still in hard copy. So they would come in, we'd have to send them back out with, you know, return postage and all that. We would get like thank you gifts for our rejections sometimes. And I was like, what's happening here. This is a real opportunity for education because, you know, Lisa and our agency we're 40 years young. In April, we celebrated our 40th anniversary. And when you've been in the industry for 40 years, the people that you pass on in whatever capacity they're querying us, if they are working in this space, we will hear from them again. We will be crossing paths with them again. And if we can continue to be a resource and a connector and offer that little something special at whatever moment in their career they're at, that will only help the industry thrive long term. And as the second generation, that is still very much ingrained and important to me.
Very generous, very abundant.
The abundance. Yeah,
abundant thinking.
Abundant thinking.
Yeah. I was going to ask about design. With designing proposals, more and more people seem to be into designing proposals. And we were wondering how important you thought that was.
Depends. My answer to everything in publishing is it depends. I say that relentlessly. And if you ever just have that question in your mind and you're wondering like, should I pay for a consult for this? Just answer, fill in the blank. It depends. More and more proposals are being designed. I do think it is a more effective way to stand out. And you can't bank on flashy to override content, right? So the content still needs to be there. But if you can really showcase the beauty of your words and your recipes or your story or your culture and what you're saying, I am more and more encouraging a design proposal, but also realizing like there's a fee associated with that. And authors have already like invested a ton of time and energy and resources into spending the time to do a proposal. And not everyone is in a position to then pay a graphic designer or has that capability to do it themselves. So we still send out, you know, Word documents or PDFs, but it's definitely changing in more of like a mixed experience. And there's a lot more highly designed proposals. And generally speaking, if I were to say non-verified, non-fact-checked, do those authors get better deals? I would tend to say probably yes. That's not to say I haven't landed plenty of six figures without a design proposal. I just think that it can really help you stand out a little bit more.
Is that something that's changed in the past 5 years?
Yes, for sure. I don't think even half of our proposals were designed 5 years ago.
Wow.
And also querying me as an agent, I'm seeing more proposals come in highly designed. And so I'm like, okay, hold on.
Interesting.
This looks great. Now let me just read the words. Now let me just like see the tone. And so if you've got both, then you're really standing out.
So it seems that voice is still really important. One of the things we're focusing on in this round of episodes is the author's voice and how to make sure that stands out. In a proposal, where do you see voice kind of factoring in the most?
The sample material, but I see it from the moment I read the title. And then I don't read a proposal in a linear fashion. I jump like to the overview, but my favorite section is the competition section because I think you can tell a lot from what kind of author this person is, how they're thinking about their book in the market, and how much they understand about publishing and being an author by how the competition section reads. But I think you can like, there's voice throughout. It's like even your table of contents is going to have voice. And in fact, if your table of contents has voice, I'm like, ooh, we got something special here, you know?
You heard it here, folks. Pay attention to your table of contents. I love it.
Or you guys did that deep dive into like where page numbers should go.
I mean, that was my ridiculous thing because I really can't stand it when I can't find a page number.
Right? So whether it's a page number, a working title, your table of contents, or your sample material, at every turn, you have an opportunity to showcase your unique you, your point of differentiation. And that is what I love. It's a very tall order. It is almost never achieved like at first draft or first glance. That's okay. But it can be cultivated.
That's fantastic to hear. I think I feel like there's all these sound bites in this interview with you, Sally, that we're going to have to pick out and put on our Instagram. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, that's about the clock and how the clock works. I'm like, I'm going to take that. I like it.
He's all about just like what time it is. And I'm like, yeah, but what's going on behind the clock?
And just to give people an idea of a day in the life or a week in the life as a literary agent.
Oh, my God. It is reading the queries, jumping over to their social, taking a look around, addressing whatever sort of fire is going on with a current book in production, having a check-in. Like, I recently realized, like, oh, you know, I have an author who's book, their deal is done, they're writing. I haven't heard from them in a while. And during the like proposal and pitch process, we were in touch very often. And they were the type of person that wanted a lot of connection. And that's one of the things that I love about them. I should probably just like send a check-in, you know, like, let's just touch base. And so that takes time. Meanwhile, you know, the fall cookbook roundups are coming out. And it's great to see certain clients that we have on those lists. And I'm sending that out on social. I'm feeding that to other publications. I'm sending congratulations to the author. It's like just relentless communication that you're not compensated for, I guess, is the day in the life of an agent. But then also at the agency, you know, I'm the succession plan and I'm second generation. And so working on our agency and our growth is part of my day to day and something I really love too. And that also means cultivating other agent relationships and the network. And so I'm part of the AALA mentor program where I'm working with an up and coming agent and we're learning just as much from one another as, you know, apparently I'm like a more, I don't know, like an older agent or more experienced agent. And so it's working on behalf of the industry as much as it is on the day-to-day of how to pitch, position, and successfully support our clients.
Yeah, because there's not like a college major, as far as I know, like the literary agent.
Right? No, but there's some interesting programs. And so the AALA, American Association of Literary Agents, is a great resource, and that should go in show notes. And then there's also, I've been really enjoying my membership with Women's Media Group, which is anyone that identifies as a woman in media, all forms of media. It's a fairly low barrier monetarily to enter, and there's great networking. So I've been in like a virtual Zoom room with the publisher of Sourcebooks and two other people, which is like not a small thing, you know?
Yeah.
My day is, you know, networking, supporting, crisis counseling, therapizing, and...
Is that a word? Can we let you get away with therapizing?
Totally.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah.
When you're talking about working in publishing, I mean, what might be next for cookbook publishing? I mean, there's... I went into Omnivore Books over the weekend, and just the fall cookbooks are coming in strong, and they're beautiful, and there's so much more variety than I think there was a few years ago. But where do you see this all going? I mean, every year there's so many cookbooks and people start thinking, well, maybe there's not enough room for my book. What do you think?
We have this conversation every year, right? Is there more space on the shelf? And luckily the virtual shelf has gotten bigger. And I once heard a publisher offer the brilliant advice, which is like, look at your cookbook shelf. And in addition to looking at what's there, look at the spaces and look and see what's missing. And so we see these hyper-focused regions, cuisines, cultures, tastes, voices. What is yours, right? Like, what is your unique point of differentiation? And equal parts, does it warrant the time, effort, energy, finances to package between two printed covers? And if the answer to both of those things is yes, cool. Maybe your book will be coming 2 years from now.
That's a very hopeful.
I mean, it sounds like you have a lot of optimism.
I mean, yes, I have a lot of optimism. What's the alternative, right? I have a lot of, you know, frustrations with our industry as well, but I love supporting and being a change maker in the cookbook and lifestyle space. Absolutely.
Is it harder to pitch?
Logistically, yes. By nature of consolidation, yes, there are fewer editors. However, the relationships are all still there. So whether somebody is freelancing now and knows exactly how to design this fantastic proposal and we can do a quick turnaround to help it stand out to their now, you know, still employed colleagues at one of the big 5.5, cool, right? Like then I can still work with that same contact and relationship. And so I will always fall on the side of optimism.
And is there anything on your wish list right now?
Oh, yeah, I should have anticipated this question. And I ask this when I'm pitching editors all the time. Specifically, no, there's nothing on my wish list. What I love getting is the sparkle, right? So if somebody is working on their proposal and they're feeling that like urgency and rush, oh my God, I have to send this off, sit with it, pause, edit it, do the best job that you can do. Unless it is a strictly trend-based book, nobody is going to do your book the way you're going to do it. And if you are meant to be published and published well, then take the time to knock it out of the park with your proposal and then send it to me, because I will pay attention to it and I will be really stoked to read through it.
Yeah, it's one of those things with books as a medium where it's like so final.
Right.
A book you just have to give so much care to.
Yeah, I mean, a book is so much work. It's so much energy. It's so much time. It's so much money on everybody's part. So it's almost like I'd rather work with people who aren't sure if they want to, because when they decide that they do, they are going to do it so well. And that's the kind of author I want to offer my expertise and insight to along the way and connect them and support them and help that grow. It's not to say that people who are dreaming about writing a book forever shouldn't put a proposal together, but there are plenty of resources to figure out if now is the time. And so again, just we say this all the time at the agency, write, not rushed.
And you got to love the process. I think, Kristen, you talk about that a lot. You got to love the process, or else it's probably much more fun to keep doing videos or something else.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is people are always like, I always wanted to do a book. My readers are asking for a book. The first question all the time is like, why do you want to write a book? And every time it has stopped people in their tracks. So if you're listening and you're wondering, like, is now the time? Like, ask yourself, why do you want to write a book? Is a book the right way to deliver this content? The answer might be yes. It might be other forms too, or it might be same content, different mediums at different times. That's the exciting thing. I mean, when I am waiting on a proposal and it finally comes in, I drop everything, right? I get so excited about that person, that content, that pitch. That's when you know it's like, it's gold.
I couldn't have said it better. I think we've given people so many good things to think about. And Sally, you've given us a little peek into the secret lives of agents, which I think we all appreciate.
Yeah.
Thank you. My absolute pleasure. And I hope that, you know, listeners can engage with these comments and, you know, tag me. I will respond. I'll answer questions. Like, that's what I love to do. So really thank you both for the opportunity. And this, I mean, people pitch me all the time and I'm like, cool, here's your homework. You could take our course or you could listen to this podcast for free. I'd start with the podcast and then go from
there. I love it. Thanks.
The course is probably like next level support. It's like, this is such an overview, you know, and different perspectives.
Consume the information. Like, there are plenty of resources out there. And the way your first season was designed, you break up every component of this publishing process so brilliantly. And it's four different authors, right? So as an agent, I'm working across the board with all these different publishers. You're bringing four different author experiences to the table. That is invaluable for a singular author wanting to learn how to publish a cookbook.
Thank you. I'd actually love to know what you're excited about from your own clients.
Yeah, well, Brian Noyes, Red Truck Bakery, has his Red Truck Farmhouse cookbook out right now, which is he's on a tour and doing the whole signing, engaging with fans. And the way he has outlined his hard work as an author is a really beautiful, shining example. And then coming up in October, Frankie Gaw, who's better known on Instagram as Little Fat Boy, is publishing a book called First Generation. And it is a gorgeous book that will make you cry and cook and salivate and do, you know, just the wonderful combination that is writing and recipes about his experience as a first generation Taiwanese American growing up in the Midwest. And then down the pike, just to kind of touch on the currently published, soon to be launched and proposal in the works, we signed Jaini, who was the winner of the Julia Child Challenge on Food Network. And she is somebody who I watched and listened and read and cooked and then met her through a series of Julia Child magic. That is her belief in Julia as a guiding light. And she was as just captivating in person as she was on paper and on the screen. And so she is also working on a book proposal.
Oh, that's great. So lots of great things to look forward to. Well, Sally, we will have links in our show notes where people can find your work. They can find the links to your class. Anything else you want to say about where people can find you or stay in touch?
Yeah, you can find us at ekisgroup.com. We have a mailing list now, so we're starting to reinvigorate just the resources that we provide to people. And on our Facebook group, How to Be a Cookbook Author, places to engage, ask questions, access to me, but more importantly, access to one another in the industry where we can support each other and just provide, you know, specific resources, names, contacts, colleagues, and also just a place to kind of commiserate about publishing and continue to fall on the side of optimism so we can collectively work towards the support of the culinary industry at large. And thank you both so much for this opportunity.
Thanks for being so positive too.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you for listening to Everything Cookbooks. You can find us on Instagram at Everything Cookbooks and join the email list on our website, everythingcookbooks.com. Thank you so much to our editor, Abby Circatella. If you have a minute, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. This helps more people find the show. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thank you for joining, and we'll catch you next time. Until then, keep on writing, reading, and cooking.